Hello, ladies and gentlemen, this is Dan Trotter, Pretty Good Bible Studies. I am covering in this audio Numbers chapter 17, verses 1 through 13, short chapter this week, and the title will be Aaron's Staff Buds. Our context is this: in the previous chapter, chapter 16, we saw the story of Korah's rebellion as Korah and some of his compadres decided that they wanted to be priests instead of the house of Aaron. And so there was a big contest. God very clearly showed by swallowing up Korah's compadres, the Reubenites, Dathan and Abiram, who helped him out. They got swallowed up, and then the 250 leaders that backed up Korah, and Korah himself got burned up by lightning or fire. And so Aaron was vindicated, but now he's going to be vindicated again in chapter 17 when we have a contest not with fire, but with 12 rods. We're going to see which one of the 12 rods, each rod standing for a particular tribe of Israel, which one of those 12 rods is going to blossom. That's the one, that rod which blooms, that will be the rod of the tribe, of the family that's in charge of the priesthood. So here we go, number 17, verses 1 through 2. Then the Lord spoke to Moses, saying, "Speak to the sons of Israel and get from them a rod for each father's household. 12 rods from all their leaders according to their father's households. You shall write each name on his rod." Now, the NIV Study Bible says that this story of the budding rod is the third in a series of accounts vindicating the Aaronic priesthood. Well, the second such account was Korah's rebellion that vindicated Aaron as the priestly family. I don't know where account one is. I wasn't able to find it, so I'm not sure what the NIV Study Bible meant. But there's no question that this is aimed at buttressing Aaron's authority, this chapter here. Now, father's household. The fathers, of course, are the names of the tribe. The household is the tribe, and the father's tribe means, for example, Reuben is a father, and he has a tribe, and Dan is a father, and he has a tribe, and Naphtali, and Zebulun, and Simeon, and Reuben, and all the rest of them. Now, there were 12 rods. Now, we need to remember, whenever we number the tribes of Israel, there's different ways you can number it. For example, you can count Joseph as one tribe, or you can count his two sons, Ephraim and Manasseh, one time, or sometimes you as one tribe. Or sometimes you can just not count Levi, for example, in the census when they numbered the tribes for military duty. Levi was left out, but Joseph was split into Ephraim and Manasseh, and you still ended up with 12. I think that there's no question that however you number the tribes there, it is meant that 12 is symbolic. When you look at the book of Revelation, 12 tribes of Israel, 12 tribes of Israel, it's symbolic of the Old Testament people of God, just as the 12 apostles were symbolic of the New Testament people of God. So there's always going to be 12, but which 12 they are might differ. Now, we're going to see when we get to verse 3 that the 12 rods here will not include Ephraim and Manasseh broken out. There will be one for Joseph, and Levi will be included in these 12 rods. I'll show you that when we get to verse 3. Now, the leaders, from all their leaders according to their father's households, their father's tribes, the leaders actually have names. They were named in Numbers chapter 1 when the census was taken, and I'm not about to read you all those names again, but they're called in Numbers 1 verse 16 the leaders of their father's tribes, the fathers being the 12 patriarchs. So these people who had names were to bring 12 rods to Moses. Now, a rod is a symbol of authority, like a scepter, and they were to write each name on the rod. Now, the question is, what name did they write on the rod? Did they write the name of their tribe, like Reuben, Dan, Naphtali, Zebulun, Simeon, and so forth, Judah? Or did they write their individual names, Elizur, Shelumiel of Judah, Nasha of Issachar, Nathanael of Zebulun, Eliab of Zebulun, Nathanael of Issachar, and Nashon of Judah, the individual names, or was it the tribal names? Well, John Gill says it's the name of the leaders of the tribe, those names I just read you. Verse 3 would seem to indicate that because Aaron's name is going to be written on one of the rods, and Aaron is the leader of that tribe, so they put Aaron down there instead of Levi. So if Aaron is on his rod, that means it's most likely that all the other tribal leaders were written on their rods. Now, Adam Clark said the rod was the staff or scepter the prince of each tribe bore, so it's not just a stick they picked up off the ground. It was a sign of royalty, as it was amongst all the peoples of the earth back then, even today, actually. We go to number 17:3. Moses continues, write Aaron's name Actually, it's the Lord talking to Moses. The Lord says, write Aaron's name on the rod of Levi, for there is one rod for the head of each of their father's household. 12 rods, 12 tribes. Now, Levi was not to be written on the name of that particular rod, because the contest was between two Levites, the Kohathites, Kohath being Korah, the head of the Kohathites. He's dead now, but still the Kohathites are probably still trying to press their rebellion. And so you got Kohathites on one side who were Levites, and Aaron was a Levite too. So if you put Levite on there, on the rod, and that rod bloomed, and say, yeah, the Levites win. Well, how do you know who's going to win? Is it the Kohathites that win, or the Aaron, or Aaron's people that win? Because they're both from the tribe. They're two families in the tribe of Levi. So we assume that since Aaron's name was on one rod, the other individual name like Nashon and all these names I just read you there on the other rods. So we get now go to Numbers 17, verses 4 through 7. This is God still speaking to Moses. You shall then deposit them in the tent of meeting in front of the testimony. Deposit the 12 rods in the tent of meeting in front of the testimony. The testimony is the two tablets of stone where the testimony was written. The testimony is the law, the Sinaitic law. So the two tables of stone were in that ark. So the rods are put in front of the testimony. Now those pronouns, I tell you, when you deal with Hebrew and Greek pronouns, they're so fuzzy. And the English translations are all over the place to drive you crazy. But I think in front here means, I agree with the NIV Study Bible here, it's probably in the holy place, not in the Holy of Holies. It doesn't really say. It could, in front of the testimony, could be in front of the ark right there in the Holy of Holies. It could be at the doorway of the Holy of Holies with the doorway open with the rods right at the western end of the holy place. So it could be either way. So it doesn't matter. The rods have to be placed there. And again, this is Moses going in there, and he's the exception to who goes into the holy place. He's not a priest, but he's the leader. He can go into the holy place, and he could go into the Holy of Holies too, according to John Gill. So the 12 rods are placed there, and I assume it's on the ground, because remember, the floor of the tabernacle was dirt. Placed there on the ground. Eventually, they're going to end up in the Ark of the Covenant. We read in Hebrews 9:4, the golden altar of incense, and the Ark of the Covenant covered it on all sides with gold, in which was a golden jar holding the manna and Aaron's rod which budded, and the tables of the covenant. So you got a golden jar of manna, you got Aaron's rod, you got the tables of the covenant all inside that box inside the Ark of the Covenant. Now, if indeed Moses went into the Holy of Holies, that would seem strange, because only the high priest actually is allowed in there, except when they're moving the tabernacle. But when the tabernacle is set up, only the high priest is allowed in there. John Gill says, on a normal day, that's true, but except for Moses. There was an exception for Moses. Yeah, but at Gill, it might be wrong about Moses being in the Holy of Holies here. As the NIV Study Bible says, he could have been at in the holy place, but he's not supposed to be in the holy place either, actually. Well, but he also could have been at the doorway of the tabernacle in the courtyard. He was allowed to be there. When it says in front of the testimony, where in front of the testimony? It could be in the Holy of Holies, the holy place, maybe even at the doorway. So I'm not going to be tight on that. The purpose of all this, God says, is I want to lessen from myself the grumblings of the sons of Israel. It worked, because after this little contest with the rods, there were no more rumblings against Moses for setting up his brother Aaron up as high priest. Nobody says, Moses, you are a nepotist. You favored your own family. Nobody grumbled against Aaron for accepting the high priesthood. Oh, you're just relying on your family connections to be the high priest. No more. That was it. This was it. Now, verse 6 says, or mentions, the 12 rods with the rod of Aaron among their rods. Some people say there were 13 rods. They say that Joseph was split up into Ephraim and Manasseh, and then, of course, you got Aaron's rod, which is basically Levi's rod. He's the head of Levi, so that would make 13. I don't know. I presume they're almost, that it's really the width there. It means included within the 12 rods is Aaron's rods. But it could be 13. We go now to Numbers 17, verses 8 through 10. Now on the next day, Moses went into the tent of the testimony, and behold, the rod of Aaron for the house of Levi had sprouted and put forth buds and produced blossoms, and it bore ripe almonds. Moses then brought out all the rods from the presence of the Lord to all the sons of Israel, and they looked, and each man took his rod. You know, I just said, I noticed here in verse 8, it says the next day Moses went into the tent of the testimony. So scratch that idea about being in front of the Ark of the Covenant, because that would not, in front of the Ark of the Covenant being at the doorway of the tent of meeting in the courtyard. Nope, verse 8 precludes that because it says Moses went into the tent of the testimony to get the rods. So my mistake. Verse 9, number 17, Moses then brought out all the rods for the presence of the Lord to all the sons of Israel, and they looked, and each man took his rod. But the Lord said to Moses, put back the rod of Aaron before the testimony to be kept as a sign against the rebels, that you may put an end to their grumblings against me, so that they will not die. Well, the rod before the testimony, I assume, means, well, actually, the NIV Study Bible says the rod was either within or near the ark, as they translate that. It was in the ark. That's the book of Hebrews says that's where it ended up, in the ark, as a perpetual testimony against the grumblings of everyone. Hey, Aaron is the high priest. Look at that rod in the Ark of the Covenant. That proves it. Aaron's the priest and his family. So let's don't have any more palace coups. Now, in verse 8, it said the rod had sprouted. NIV translates that the rod had not only sprouted, but it bore ripe almonds. So the idea is that all these buds, blossoms, and almonds were beyond what God's test called for. He made it sprout with steroids. He made it sprout in spades. It wasn't just a little leafy sprout. It was buds and blossoms and almonds. So there would be no uncertainty, as the NIV Study Bible says. Notice all this is done publicly. The tribal leaders came forth. They took their rods, and they all looked out there. What everybody was there could see. Yep. Aaron wins, we lose. There was no doubt. We go now to number 17, verses 11 through 13. Thus Moses did just as the Lord had commanded him. So he did. Then the sons of Israel spoke to Moses, saying, behold, we perish, we're dying, we're all dying. Everyone who comes near to the tabernacle of the Lord must die. Are we to perish completely? Ooh, a little bit of humility there. Now, of course, these sons, that's the leaders of the 12 tribes, those named individuals whose names I didn't read you. They just immediately said, we're going to die. Now notice the rhetoric here, rhetorically, how it said, behold, we perish, we're dying, we're all dying. John Gill says that the subjects and the verbs flowing so quickly together shows that they were panicked. The bloom on Aaron's rod made them realize they had made a bad, bad mistake. Since God had not chosen them, God would naturally be upset with them. And these leaders were familiar with the Levitical laws that said, if you approach God and you aren't a priest, you're going to die. These tribal leaders had seen Nadab and Abihu fried because they offered strange fire. They were priests, but they did their priestly duties wrongly, and they died for it. So, yeah, they were scared. Of course, they were stupid to get themselves in this situation anyway. They'd already seen Dathan and Abiram swallowed up in an earthquake. They had already seen Korah and the 250 of his cohorts burn up with lightning and fire just the day before. But no, they're still going to rebel against Moses. So I don't feel too sorry for them. Now, the rebels here have gone from one extreme to the other. They say, everyone who comes near is going to die. We're all going to die. Well, that's not true. Not everyone who comes near, because the tribe of Aaron, the family of Aaron in the tribe of Levi, the family of Aaron could come near to the ark and to the tabernacle. They weren't going to die. That's what Adam Clark says, but I think that basically what they may have meant implicitly, everyone as in everyone but the sons of Aaron. In other words, in a panic there, they're screaming out. They're not going to be all that precise about it. Well, how did they go from one extreme to the other? Well, first they thought that everyone outside the tribe of Aaron could approach. In Numbers chapter 16, verse 3, we read this. They came together against Moses and Aaron and told them, you have gone too far. Everyone in the entire community is holy. Everyone can approach God. Everyone can be a priest. Everyone can offer a sacrifice. And now they're saying, everyone who comes near is going to die. So, one extreme to the other. Ladies and gentlemen, we have now established Aaron as the number one authenticated, authorized high priest in the nation of Israel. And now we are ready to go to Numbers chapter 18. In Numbers 18, verses 1 through 32, we'll look at various duties of the priest and the Levites, the priest being of the family of Aaron from the tribe of Levi, and the other three families of the tribe of Levi. Those are called the Levites. That's the family of Gershon, Merari, and Kohath. We'll look at these duties in our next audio, and I hope you enjoyed this one.